Well, hello and welcome to the worldwide broadcast of the Ted and Austin Brower Show, bringing you guys the latest world news and health research. It's a blessed day down here at Health Master, staying busy as always. And how are you doing today, Dad?
Austin, I'm doing great. The tax bill passed. I don't have to pay that stupid Obama mandate now anymore for my health insurance, not having that. So I'm excited. Why don't you go into some detail on that?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's definitely pretty exciting. I mean, as with most tax things, a lot of the information isn't going to be active, and we're not going to know everything about it until probably next week. But, I mean, yeah, there's a couple of key aspects on it. I know that the child dependence, as far as how many child or children that you have, it'll give you a bigger break, which I have two kids now. Actually, the second one will be here in like 3 weeks, a baby girl. So that'll help a little bit. I really wish they would put a cap on that, though. That should have had a cap on it years ago, that you can't have 8, 9, 10, 12, 15 kids and continue to get income tax refund checks back to you, even if you don't work. That's kind of ridiculous. But the biggest aspect is, like what Dad said, getting rid of this Obamacare mandate. And, of course, the Democrats are going completely, you know, hysterical again, going into this mania. They're claiming that thousands and thousands of people are going to die now because the mandate's not here and it's not going to force people to get health insurance. And the issue that I've told everybody before, and Dad and I have been in total agreement with this. You there?
I'm here, buddy. Go ahead.
Okay.
I'm doing my cat sound because they're going berserk because they didn't get what they wanted again.
I got it, man. I got it. That just threw me off.
Sorry.
Well, that was the thing before is, you know, they charge you a penalty for a whole family, you know, $3,000-$4,000 now. The crazy part about that was there was no cap on what the penalty was going to be. They looked at it and they wouldn't know, Congress wouldn't even know what they were going to make the penalty until next year because they handed it over to IRS. So if we gave it another 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years, put a cap on it, there's no cap. This thing could have blown up the $25,000, $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 a year fine without having health insurance. And the biggest thing is what Dad and I kept saying was, if you're going to fine us, at least fine us and give us the base Obamacare insurance that you have. At least that way you're paying for something and you're getting health insurance, but they wouldn't even do that. They would literally illegally and unconstitutionally steal money from you at a gunpoint threat. If you don't pay it, you keep dragging on. They'll take you to court. You still fight it. They'll end up arresting you and throwing you to jail. Ask Wesley Snipes how that worked out for him for back taxes. And that was ridiculous. 7 years for back taxes. I mean, give me a break. And so they just keep fining you until you finally paid it, and it literally was an unconstitutional theft of your funds for simply being healthy and not having health insurance. That's what boggled my mind about it. So, yeah, we're excited to see more stuff's going to come out, I'm sure, in the next couple weeks, especially as people start to file and get stuff in for next year. I start to figure out how much money a lot of people are going to be saving. They really, I really wish they wouldn't have had so much stuff in there as far as with Goldman Sachs boys writing it and benefiting a lot of these multi-billion-dollar companies that, in my opinion, aren't going to bring a lot of business back here. They're still going to do business as usual, but it did cut a lot of stuff out for the middle class, as they said it was, and the Obamacare mandate, which was one of the most important things, because that was straight-up thievery, no other way to put it. But also, speaking of health, too, I wanted to add this in here. This is a pretty interesting thing, and Dad knows a lot about this. Researchers from nonprofit organization Fair Health, this was actually recently published in the Daily Mail, carried out an analysis of private health insurance claim records from 2007 to 2016. Their study showed that individuals who are 18 years old and above accounted for over a third of the allergy insurance claims. The researchers also found there is an overall 377% spike in allergies reported in the last 10 years alone than that one-third of food allergies were caused by other specific foods, a category where foods were unknown. Meanwhile, the main foods that trigger severe allergic reactions basically were peanuts, tree nuts, and seeds. The highest increase were reported in tree nuts and seeds with 603%, while allergy in peanuts was increased by 445%. They also found that the diagnoses were more common in young boys compared to girls, but in adulthood, more women developed the food allergies than men. The results made researchers believe that changes changes to the contents of food or the Western diet, with a lot of the preservatives and, in my opinion, glyphosate and vaccinations are being a contributing factor to the surge in these food allergies. So I thought this was pretty crazy, Dad, that we've literally seen just in other food allergies, other specified foods, 377% spike in the last 10 years, with nuts and seeds going up over 600% in the last 10 years. What do you think is contributing to a lot of this besides what we know, or do you think it's just a combination of all this stuff and toxins that we're ingesting now?
They're using peanut oil in vaccinations, Austin. I mean, you know, so the body's developing an antigen response to the peanut oil, which means it basically becomes an invader, which means it creates an allergy to the peanuts. And they're putting human placental extract, they're putting human fecal cells, they're putting all kinds of stuff into vaccinations now, causing just a plethora of horrible, horrible side effects. And, you know, and the sad part about it is that, you know, they force us to buy health insurance, like you said earlier, and then they feed us food they're going to poison us with, so they make money on both ends. And I have one friend of mine that I know personally, he paid $4,000 in Obama mandates last year, and then they sent him an additional bill for another $10,000 in additional bill he owes because of the income tax that he'd filed the year before. So he had to pay $14,000, and he doesn't have health insurance because he self-insures. And, I mean, $14,000 in tax penalties because he didn't have health insurance, and yet they would not give him one single bit of Obamacare for free because he paid for this. I mean, this whole thing is so corrupt, and it's designed to destroy the middle class. It's designed to destroy the consumer in the United States as far as their discretionary income. And there was no cap on it. What they were doing is they were continually raising the amount of money you had to pay in penalties to try to force you to comply by getting insurance. That's why they did it. I mean, that's why they did it. They figure sooner or later you'd rather pay the insurance and get a basic plan and not be paid to pay over $1,000 a month in penalties. So it's unbelievably horrible what they've done to the American population through these ridiculous, unconstitutional taxes they put on for health care. And secondly, with this whole problem with these allergies all over the country, I mean, you got the soybean oil being put in allergies, you've got peanut oil, you've got corn oil, you've got all of this different stuff that's creating a massive allergy response into all of these children. It's getting worse and worse. In fact, right now, U.S. life expectancy falls again for a second straight year. And a lot of this is relating back to drug overdoses. Over 60,000 people died. Life expectancy in the U.S. fell for a second year last year. Overall expectancy fell to 78.6 years since the year before. It was the first time life expectancy in the U.S. has declined in 2 years in a row, and they're blaming this on the people that are dying, over 60,000, who are young people who are basically opioid deaths. Now, there were 63,000 people who died of drug overdoses in 2016, and the majority of these overdose deaths were basically unintentional, like Todd. Todd, my brother-in-law, died in 2016. You remember that, Austin, 2 years ago, and he didn't mean to kill himself. I mean, he may have been 2015. 2015, he died, and the drug death rate from drug overdoses rose 18% a year from 2014 to 2016. Now, they're going to go much, much, much higher this year because of the 10,000 metric tons that are being produced now in Afghanistan. But I want to talk about these life statistics very quickly about U.S. life expectancy in the U.S. to start with. The United States has the highest infant death rate of any industrialized country, period. That means more babies die in the United States primarily from bad prenatal nutrition and from vaccines, in my opinion, than from any other cause. Now, that means that they have a huge amount of babies. Thousands and thousands and thousands of babies die every year from infant crib death, from vaccines, from whatever you want to call it, when they're born. Well, if you have a person who's 100 years old and you have a baby who dies at birth, that means 0 plus 100 divided by 2, the average life expectancy is 50. That's what it is. Just simple math. 2 divided into 100 is 50. Now, the problem they've done here is they've aborted 60 million babies. Now, I did the math on this a few years ago. If you take 60 million babies and you look at how many babies die per year from the highest infant death rate in the entire industrialized world, we have not had a life increase at all in the United States for the past 25, 30 years since the abortion rates. Because what's happening is we're killing all the babies that were dying before they're born, many of them. So let me repeat that. These babies are dying before they're ever entered into the death statistics. Another example. And when I talked to Samantha about this yesterday, my 15-year-old, I told her, I explained to her what partial birth abortion was. They'll take a baby that's fully formed, late trimester, and they'll basically pull the baby's head out, stick a cannula inside of its skull, suck its brains out, while it's screaming and crying and everything else, trying to get out of the womb, and kill it right on the spot because it's not fully born. They basically don't have the ability to be charged with murder. Well, that baby right then does not count into death statistics, even though it died during the birth process. And you see stuff like this. So when you actually analyze the actual life expectancy in the United States and you look at the real numbers, it's very, very, very much lower than they're telling us right now because of the death of these children that aren't counted from the immunizations and from childbirth and the highest infant death rate. Secondly, we have to also understand that right now we have a huge percent of the population that's come down with senile dementia, many of them coming down with senile dementia and Alzheimer's disease, early onset Alzheimer's, in their 40s and 50s and 60s. So we have a large percentage of the population, Austin, that's going to reach the 70s completely senile with Alzheimer's disease. And I'm projecting from the age of 40 up right now, we'll probably have 25% of those people when they reach the age of 75 to 80, if they live that long, are going to have some type of senile dementia or memory issues. It's going to happen because of the aluminum that we're being completely doused with all the time from the atmosphere with the chemtrails, because of all the drugs that people are being given. I spoke to a man earlier today. I'm not going to give any names out. And he basically was having problems with his eyesight, and he's in his 20s, your age, Austin. And he ended up in a situation where we started having double vision, really severe headaches, and we started tracing it back to a muscle relaxer that he was being given, and the side effects of the muscle relaxer were almost identical to the side effects of his symptoms. Now, the thing about this is this, guys, and I'm going to say this to you guys over and over and over again. Please listen to me, please. And I'm trying to be as sincere as I possibly can right now. If you have a health issue that can be corrected through nutrition or lifestyle changes, try that first. Try the health nutrition approach first. You know, I mean, we're here to help you as best we possibly can and work with your medical doctor. If you're going to a doctor for some condition and you want to try to work with somebody, we'll be happy to help you down here at Health Masters. We can't diagnose or prescribe or take you off prescription drugs and all that kind of stuff. We don't do that. But what we can do is we can say, hey, look, we've got a healthy heart protocol, or we've got a healthy weight loss protocol, or we've got a healthy immune system protocol, or we have a healthy blood sugar protocol. And I always suggest to people, Austin, and you know this because you've seen me work with thousands, try the natural approach first. I mean, think about this for a second. We've got all of these kids that have been diagnosed with ADD and ADHD. I wrote a book on it. I actually wrote a book on it. You can get it on Amazon for like $1.50 or whatever it's called, Maximum Solutions to ADD, Autism, and Learning Disabilities. I wrote this book almost 20 years ago. And I would go to these seminars, Austin. I'd be speaking to 20, 30, 40,000 people in attendance. We had stadiums filled. You were with me on the platform many times there. And I would say to them, let me ask you guys a question. Let's talk about ADD for a second. Let's talk about children have ADD and ADHD, adult, you know, attention deficit disorder. I said, let's think about this for a second. You know, the normal response when you go into a medical office and you have a child that's been diagnosed by many times the school nurse with ADD is they put the child on a Schedule II amphetamine called Adderall or one of the other ones they use, and, you know, Ritalin. And the sad part about this is these are Schedule II drugs in the same category with with morphine, opium, Percodan, and Demerol, the strongest category being with heroin, Schedule I, illegal, no medicinal purposes. So the second, the strongest one you can have to correct a condition is a Schedule II where they put morphine and Ritalin and Adderall. These are amphetamine salts. And I always told the people at the seminars, and I'm telling you guys this now, and I'm doing it as sincerely as I possibly can, doesn't it make sense that if you have a child that's been diagnosed with ADD or ADHD or learning disabilities, to look at their diet, look at their allergies, look at their sleep patterns, look at their supplements, look at their vitamins, look at their everything, what they're eating, what they're drinking, who they're talking with, or are they on the telephone for all hours of the night with their friends on their cell phones in their bedrooms. Find out what's going on with this child before you put them on a super addictive Schedule II drug. And I would ask people at the seminars, I'd say, how many people does that make sense to? Let me see your hands. Like everybody at the seminar would raise their hands. But very few people do that, Austin. They have a problem with a kid because the kid's being disruptive in the classroom or the kid's talking, which normal boys do that anyhow. Not anymore, I guess, because they're all trying to turn them all into transgender little sissy boys. And if they do talk in the classroom and do something wrong, they can't spank them anymore. Now they got to drug them into a stupor. I mean, when I was a kid, if I talked in the classroom, they took me to the teacher's office, the principal's office, and beat the yak out of me, told me to quit doing it. And after three or four times of getting the yak beat out of you, thought, well, you know, it's just not really worth talking in the classroom right now. I better listen because I don't want to go back to the principal again and be whacked again. And so I just learned, you know, after I had to bend over the chair and get the redwood, you know, 20 or 30 times over a period of 10 years, that it was just easier not to do that. It was easier just to shut up in the class. And we had high school teachers who were basically, you know, basically ex-football guys from college, and they would drag you out into the hallway. I mean, we're adults now. We're 15, 16-year-old guys. We're not kids anymore. And they would hit you so hard, they would literally make you take three steps forward and whack you so hard. And, you know, it wasn't fun. None of this was fun. This is what they did back in the 60s and the 70s because we still had corporal punishment in the schoolrooms. We didn't have to drug the kids. But after these teachers started getting sued for this, they had to find another way to control the students, so they found the best way to do it rather than getting themselves into a politically incorrect argument as far as whether corporal punishment is okay or not. They decided to drug the kids into a stupor. And that's why we have so many children right now that have moved from methamphetamines when they were kids, because they were given to them legally, to meth and other types of compounds when they get out of high school, when they can no longer get their prescriptions filled for Ritalin or Adderall. Guys, it's a major, major problem. And these types of drugs are far more of a drug that's more difficult to get off than, say, marijuana. Now, marijuana has some problems with kids because of the brain development, but the marijuana is not necessarily addictive to most people, but these amphetamines are. They're extremely addictive, and that's why the military, well, they may have changed their policy by now. They used to not allow you to go into the military if you've been on Adderall or Ritalin because they didn't want you on the military as a dependent to amphetamines. They didn't want you in there on that. So we've got to start looking at this. We've got to look at the real life expectancy numbers in the United States, and we have to average in the infant death rates from the aborted fetuses that we did not basically let have a life, and we aborted them before they got here. And we've got to realize that this whole thing's a lie. This whole extended life is not what they're telling us that it is. It's a life of basically inability to move, laying in a nursing home for 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10 years. My grandfather lived to be 86 years old. His name was Karl Barrichter. He came from Germany every 6 months and stayed with us for 6 months, as long as he could stay in the country, you know, without messing up his visa. Is that my mom and my dad got divorced. And every day he was outside raking the yard or working. He worked every day until he was 86. And he never had any health problems. He was on no medications. See, that's a quality of life. He had a stroke, was dead like 30 days later. You know, Upa was gone. That was the end of Upa on this planet. Anyhow, we'll see him in the next life. And the thing about it is that, you know, that's the life I want to have. My father was 81 years old, 82 years old, and his most favorite thing to do was to play the accordion. Oh, my gosh, he could play the accordion. He had hundreds of songs memorized. I mean, he was amazing. He had a real nice Herner accordion that I inherited, praise God. It's a beautiful instrument. I don't know how to play it. I was hoping my younger son, Harrison, could do it because he loves to play musical instruments like my dad did. And my dad would go every week to the nursing home. He wasn't in a nursing home. He'd go to the nursing home. He'd have a little concert for the people in the nursing home just to entertain them, to make them feel important. And that was it. He said the most favorite thing he did in his life was play that accordion. He loved to play that accordion. And he was 81 years old, 82 years old. I don't remember the exact number because of his birth date. He died in 84. And he was playing the accordion in the nursing home, had a stroke, dropped dead, died right there on the spot, playing the accordion. And I thought to myself, wow. What a way to check out. You're not laying in the nursing home for 6 years, not knowing who you are anymore, all drugged out of your mind, and you're basically just here 1 minute, you're going the next to the heaven. Guys, that's the way to check out. Be in your 80s, be in your 90s, and just leave the planet. Just check out. And this coming down with senile dementia when you're 40, 50, 60 years old, and laying around for 20, 30, 40 years, not even knowing who you are, and having someone else take care of you, that is zero quality of life to me, Austin. It is zero quality of life. And that's what this drug manufacturing cartel that's run by these Sabbatean Kabbalists who run the world finances and the world drugs and the world communication and the world internet and the world everything. They run everything, okay? That's why they're trying to control the internet. This is what they want us to do. They want us to extract as much human capital out of us as they possibly can before we die, because their greed has no boundaries. So, guys, please, before you do mainstream medical treatment protocols, check with an alternative practitioner. It's so important. Also, I just had another friend of mine here, and he went on the HGH Stimulate and the magnesium brain food. The doctor told me he needed to be on blood pressure medicine. His blood pressure had gone up to 130 over 90. And he said, well, I don't want to do that. So he came to see me a few weeks ago, and his doctor said, okay, you can try an all-natural approach. And he went on the protocol, and yesterday he had a stress test, and he said the maximum his blood pressure went up to was doing a stress test was 120 over 80. It already dropped 10 points on the bottom end during a stress test. And that was like within a couple of weeks. The doctor was shocked because he wasn't taking meds. Guys, he was using the HGH Stimulate and the magnesium brain food. and a few other things, the vitamin E to keep the blood thinner. Guys, it's so important that you understand that there are natural alternatives to so many of these different types of conditions without getting yourself involved in drugs. And I'm not making light of the people that are already on drugs, but guys, if you're already on a bunch of prescription drugs and there's natural protocols, you need to go work with your medical doctor or find somebody in your area who can help you to get off of the drugs if you can. Sometimes you can. Sometimes you can't get off the drugs. Sometimes prescription drugs are necessary. But guys, it's a lot easier to try first a natural approach. What do you think, Austin?
Oh, you're absolutely right. That's what I tell everybody on the phone and via email, you know, and that's why it's always best if you have friends or family to push them in that direction and try to go the natural approach first. It's always usually much easier to do that than to have to backtrack. Also, too, in other news I want to touch base on with antibiotics, because these, you know, antibiotics are very overused. And one aspect that we've had an issue with in the United States, actually in the entire world, with antibiotic resistance is because of the food supply. The beef, the chicken, the turkey, all this stuff literally gets pumped full of antibiotics so heavy stuff that's not organic, that being said. Most of the stuff that's certified fully organic meat, they can't use antibiotics and stuff like that. That's why I always tell people, if you're eating a lot of meat, if you're working out a lot, if your diet consists of a lot of that, spend the extra money and get certified organic meat and don't be pumping a bunch of antibiotics into your system. You know, because antibiotics, they can be very, very good. If you need them, you need them to work effectively. But most research has basically shown now that people take way too many antibiotics for way too many things. Now, recent research has consistently shown a new article that was done out of Canada's McMaster University has shown that antibiotic administration during labor negatively affects the gut health of the newborn child as well. According to their recent studies, giving moms antibiotics during labor, which isn't happen all the time, but apparently from what I'm reading, it's more and more common now. If there's any issues whatsoever, if there's any complications whatsoever, they immediately put them in antibiotics as basically a safety protocol. Now, something's going on and that needs to be done, that's the doctor's decision to do so. However, a lot of times this is simply just a backup and it doesn't need to be done. But again, you need to follow the advice of your doctor in that situation. But what they found here is that giving moms antibiotics during labor actually delays the growth of the healthy gut bacteria in newborn infants for up to the first 12 weeks of their life. And as the researchers note, early development of healthy, basically gut health, gut microbes, is essential for lifetime health. Jennifer Steens, an assistant professor of medicine at McMaster University, who worked on this, basically said she was one of the study's primary authors, emphasized the importance of gut bacteria in early childhood. She said, the early microbial colonization and succession is critically important to healthy development with impacts on metabolic and immune processes throughout their entire life. To assess infant gut bacteria development, Steens and the rest of the team tested the baby's gut bacteria at four different points in time during the first 12 weeks of their life at 3 days, 10 days, 6 weeks, and 12 weeks on a total of 74 mother and infant pairs that participated in the study. What they found was that infants given antibiotics displayed a significant delay in the microbe development and maturation in the first several weeks of life. In most cases, the gut bacteria recouped by 12 weeks if no other antibiotics were administered, but Stearns contended that the long-term effects of the delay remained unclear because they did not do any more research after the 12-week period. So this is something you have to also be careful of once the child's born. I've seen this so many times, and a lot of times, in my opinion, this starts because of the vaccinations. I've seen a cascading series of effect with a lot of children, with a lot of friends that I have now. I'm at the age now where just a plethora of people around me have been having kids for the last pretty much 5 to 6 years that I've been very close with growing up and so forth. And what I've seen consistently is the kid starts getting basically a small cold. They go to the doctor. A lot of times it's nothing significant. It's a runny nose. It's something basic. They immediately put the child on antibiotics. The problem is, as soon as they put them on antibiotics, it completely wipes out their entire immune system. done. I mean, when you put a couple-month-old baby or even 6, 8, 10, 12-month-old baby on antibiotics, their gut microbe, everything is shot. Well, then what happens is they get off the antibiotics, they get healthy, they're good to go again, and about a week or two later, anything they're exposed to, anything they put in their mouth usually ends up getting them sick again, and it escalates rapidly to the point that they get an ear infection very quickly. I've seen this happen numerous times. Then they go back on antibiotics again. They come off of them. They get it cleared up. They're good to go. Then they go in for another shot of vaccines. Of course, right after that, they get sick. Bam. Again, unbelievably bad. Ear infection almost immediately. Got to go on antibiotics again. Most of this time, they end up having to go in for tubes in their ears at some point in time because it's escalated so bad. And then, sadly, this is a cascading series of events that affects this children's life, these children's lives, for months, if not years down the road, because they were given antibiotics for really no legitimate purpose, because they had a light fever or they had a runny nose and it wasn't something that they really needed to be on. And then, as I told you guys before, I know three separate cases now, completely unrelated to one another, of children at 12 months of age going in for their annual 12-month monster shot load where they get all these vaccines back to back to back, and literally within 1 month's time, every single child, the parents that I've talked to, they developed hand, foot, and mouth disease within a month of getting their 1 year vaccination slam fest of all these shots at one time. And that's not coincidence, guys. That's not me doing a legitimate research study, so don't email me and say, well, that's not controlled. No, it's people I know personally, it's friends that I've known for over a decade, and it's people that I watch closely to see how their children are doing because they're in the medical field and they're in pediatrician care that love antibiotics and love vaccines. Then I look at Hunter. One thing that I've noticed that we've used with Hunter, and he doesn't even get colds anymore at all, period. They didn't stop, was the children's probiotic, the oral probiotic that they chew up. He eats like 2 to 3 of these a day, and it even says on the box you can give your children up to 4 of these a day. And what it does is it gives them the probiotics that's designed to be in their mouth and also designed to go into their gut and designed to flourish and go in their digestive tract from the very beginning. It's an incredibly aggressive formula. It's very new research. It hasn't been out but a couple years. Once we started finding out about it, we did more research, and we immediately started getting it, making it, and carrying it because it's so effective. And what it does is it massively prevents a lot of this stuff from going further than it should, and it protects their throat and nose and ears from getting infections in them because it massively keeps the probiotics at the beginning where they're supposed to be. So you guys have digestive enzymes, all kinds of stuff from the saliva. You have probiotics that are all throughout the body, even into the digestive tract from the mouth. So this is something that we've worked with. It's worked really good, but that's what I found to help out a lot with these young kids, prevent them from getting sick and getting ear infections, the children's chewable probiotic. But I wanted to bring that research study up there because I see so many kids now getting antibiotics and the mothers getting antibiotics while they're pregnant, and this stuff just cascading year and year down the road. And most of these parents, they think it's normal for their kid to be at the doctor's office every month and literally to live on antibiotics. Every other month they're on a different cycle of antibiotics, and they think it's normal. Guys, it doesn't have to be like that. Hunter doesn't even go to the doctor ever. He's been to the doctor, I think, 2 or 3 times, and that's usually just for regular checkups to check his height and see stuff like that with our natural doctor. It's not normal for them to be on antibiotics every couple weeks or have a cold and an ear infection and getting tubes in their ears. Granted, there are some circumstances stuff like that happens, and you can't avoid it depending on what they're exposed to, but on normal circumstances, if these kids are healthy, they're being fed right, and they have right proper nutrition, and they're staying away from these unbelievably deadly toxic vaccines, they don't have to months out of the year. It doesn't have to be that way, Dad.
I can agree with you 100%, Austin. I've had so many people that I've known over the years that have had their children on basically antibiotics literally nonstop. I've seen it over and over and over to the point the kids are put into the hospitals. And, you know, and you guys never did that. And we have a medical doctor who's also functions as our pediatrician. He's not a pediatrician. His name's Dr. Todd Robinson in Lakeland. If you have anybody in the area who wants to go to him, he's a great doctor, phenomenal guy, Robinson Family Clinic. And like you say, we don't go there very often because we stay healthy all the time. I mean, I've never understood why somebody wants to bring a healthy baby into a sick doctor's office. It makes no sense to me. We have a guest today, Austin. Her name is Karen Rogers. She's a good friend of mine. I've known her for several years now. And Karen wrote a really, really good book called Racing with My Shadow that I read. She's a professional leading jockey at the New York Thoroughbred Track, or was, and was one of the first successful female jockeys in her book. In her book, Racing with My Shadow, she tells of her personal journey to overcome the negative results of childhood sexual and emotional abuse by becoming a professional and accomplished athlete. The abuse drove her to the top of the thoroughbred racing industry at the age of 16. Now, I wanted to bring her in here to talk about her book and to talk about, we're only going to have Karen on for a few minutes. I really want to get her to the heart of what's going on. I appreciate her so much that I wanted to bring her on to promote her book on the show. But I want to ask you a question. Karen, thank you so much for being with me today.
Well, thank you, Ted. Thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak to your listeners. And if I could say a quick prayer for the listeners today, Heavenly Father, I pray that my words would help those struggling with sexual abuse and those issues that come with it, the addictions, the bad relationships. And I just pray that my words can give them hope and lead them to a relationship with you. In Jesus' name, amen.
Thanks, Karen. Now, let's just get to the crux of the issues. I want people to read your book. I'm not going to give the whole story out on your book. But what advice would you give those who have been through sexual, emotional, or physical abuse when they were young, and how did you overcome all of this? So I'm kind of going to turn it over to you now and just let you talk and just tell us from your heart how you feel about what happened to you and how you were able to overcome it, Karen.
Well, what happens is these predators, it was my stepfather, they target families, and they're very charming, and they target parents that have children. They're often in part of Boy Scouts with me. It was he was a horse trainer, and he got me involved with the horses and racing. And they seem like they're wonderful people, but really they manipulate, and they're very good at it. And so he started the abuse at 9 years old. It was emotional, and then it became sexual and rape a little bit later on, but he basically lied and manipulated my mother and my family so they didn't see what was happening. And what happened to me was I felt like I was bad. I felt like it was my fault. I felt like I ruined my mother's life. I felt like I took her boyfriend away. And that's what happens with sexual abuse, is you tend to blame yourself, even though it's not your fault and you have no way to say no. It's worse than physical abuse because it's so related to who you are. And what happens is your psyche, sort of your subconscious, is set up. It's like a program in a computer. This sets you up as a child for this kind of programming and belief system. And believing that I was bad, it ended up later on, I got into a toxic marriage and married somebody that was very similar to my stepfather, because I wanted him to save me, but basically I wanted to save the child that was hurting. So the subconscious is very, it doesn't go away, it doesn't have a time limit. And when this happens as a young child, you repress it, but it doesn't go away. I wanted to make myself okay by becoming a great jockey, which was okay for a while, but those repressed self-esteem feelings eventually surfaced in relationships. I was also anorexic. My body image was, I became bulimic. My body image, I didn't want to develop into a woman, because then I believed subconsciously it was my fault what happened. So it affected eating disorders. Later I became I was in a toxic relationship with a man that was very controlling. And so it really does set you up for a toxic life later on.
How did you overcome it, Karen? I mean, what did you do? I mean, when you realized what was going on in your life and how bad it had become, was it through the power of prayer? Was it through becoming a Christian? Was it through going back to church? Was it because a pastor talked to you? How did you get through this, and how are you able to talk about it now?
Well, I wasn't raised in church. I actually knew that there was a God when I died in a racing spill at Saratoga, and I had an out-of-body experience, and that's when I knew there was more to life. So I started searching. And then I had a relationship with God, but when I married this man who was very manipulative, he sort of became my God, and God took a back seat. It was very dangerous, and that's what drew me down into the alcohol, and it was just terrible. So what got me out of it was I believed all my problems were from my husband, and so got away from him and started racing again and winning again, I thought I was still drinking, and I was still miserable, and I didn't know what was wrong with me, because memories were repressed. So I prayed to God that he would show me what is wrong with me. I'm successful. I don't know what's going on here. But I was drinking and I was in toxic relationships. Another jockey was involved in a spill, and he actually came forward with his sexual abuse by his stepfather. His name is Robbie Davis, and it came out in Sports Illustrated. And when I read that article, I was amazed that he told the big secret. And his courage to come forward with his secret made me think that maybe my problems were related to my stepfather and my abuse. And so I started praying for God to give me the memories, which I did not want to face. But I knew it was either kill me, God, or show me what's wrong with me. That's the point I was at.
Wow. So you accepted Christ and it changed your life totally.
Yes. And he also, later after I started writing my book and getting the memories and realizing I was manipulated by my stepfather, I also, with the drinking, a key prayer that I said, because I couldn't stop drinking, was, God, please take away my desire for alcohol. I didn't ask him to take away the alcohol itself, but my desire for it. And I said it in faith, knowing he could do it. And I had total faith that he would do it, and not that I couldn't, but that he would if I gave it to him. And my desire for alcohol was gone. So it's been 27 years. I haven't had a drop of alcohol, never wanted it.
When you confronted your stepfather for what he had done, because I know he was never prosecuted for what he had done, did he have a flippant attitude about it? Was he remorseful? Did he care? Or was he just completely apathetic? I mean, what was his attitude?
Well, I believe he must have been MK Ultra because he came from a family that was Illuminati. I changed his name in the book, but he could flip. And I believe in some sort of sick way, he thought what he was doing was normal, because I believe that this was done to him as a child and his mother and on generationally. So I don't believe he had no conscience. So it's really hard to understand where he was at. The other thing I want to say is forgiveness is very key, because, God commands us to forgive. We don't have to feel forgiveness, but we have to do it. We have to make the choice. And when I made the choice to forgive, I didn't feel forgiveness for him, but it came later. And I just wanted to say that if you hold on and have unforgiveness, it's like taking poison and thinking the other person will die.
Right. Well, let me ask you another question, because I know my listeners want to hear this. What happened to you during your near-death experience from the racing accident that happened at Saratoga? Was there confirmation of your death? I mean, was this the beginning of your journey to realize that we were not alone and there was a life after we passed this world? I mean, tell me about that experience, Karen.
Okay, well, I went down in a spill at Saratoga, which is a very big, it's the biggest racing meeting in the country in August. And the ambulance, which follows every race, picked me up. I don't remember anything until, I just remember going off, like going over the horse's shoulder. And the next thing I knew, I was floating up and back, and I saw my body on a stretcher with my arm up over my head because my shoulder had been dislocated, and there was two doctors leaning over me, and I was wearing all white. And what hit me was how small I was. And as I floated up and back, I thought, wow, I'm really small. And then I thought, wait a minute, I must be dying, because I'm up here and my body's down there. And my head was very clear. I was really who I am. Out of your body, you're much more in tune with your feelings and your emotions. And I knew what was important. I wanted to go back and say that I was sorry. I wanted to go, but I wanted to go back and say I was sorry for ruining my mother's life, which is what I believed. I was 18 at the time. And so I focused on my body. I was hovering on what I believed was the ceiling and the wall, and looking down at myself and saying, wow, if I focus on my body, maybe I'll get back. And so the next thing, I woke up in the ambulance on the way to the hospital, and I was in and out of consciousness for a few days. But the point was, when I was out of my body, what was important to me was my mother and my relationship with her, which I had suppressed when I was racing. All I cared about was myself. I was selfish. All I cared about was winning races. I didn't care about anyone else. It was my survival mechanism. Yet when I was out of my body, the love was important. My relationship with my mom was important. I didn't even think about the horses. It was who I really am. And then, to talk about your next question, 9 years later, I was writing my book.
Was there any confirmation as far as that your heart had stopped or you were clinically dead or anything like that from the doctors?
Not yet. Yes, 9 years later, I was writing my book, and people had said maybe you were given drugs or whatnot. So I was back at Saratoga, and I'd stopped my book at the point of the out-of-body experience, stopped writing it. And I was at Saratoga, had another spill, four horses ran over me, I was fine, the ambulance took me back to the first aid room, and I thought, wow, maybe I can find answers from 9 years ago. And lo and behold, there was the doctor, same doctor from 9 years ago. I told him what had happened, he confirmed that I had died, and he showed me the room where I saw myself, but it was a small, tiny room, and what I had seen in the experience was a big room with an oak desk in the back and nurses around it. So this wasn't making any sense to me. I said, this could not have been the room. It doesn't look the same. And he said, yes, it was. This is where we lost you. We lost your pulse, and your shoulder was dislocated. So I backed up, and it, you know, before I left there, I was very confused. I almost wish I hadn't gone back, but I opened up the door to the next small room, and there was the oak desk I had seen. And then I was sure that the desk had been moved to a bigger room, but he said, no, this is the nurse's station. So when I backed up, I realized everything was in line if there was no wall. But the wall had been there, he confirmed. So then I looked at the ceiling, and the ceiling was low, and I was up way high in the out-of-body experience. So what I, the conclusion I came to was I was up way high, and I hadn't hit the ceiling. I had hit another dimension where I could have turned and gone. But what I saw below me was two rooms. I saw the nurses paying no attention to me and the doctors leaning over me, but I didn't see the wall, and I didn't make that connection.
Wow, what an incredible way. So it made you realize that there was a alternative to this life. It made you realize that our spirit doesn't die. It made you realize that you can see after you've died and after they lost your pulse, change your life and set you on the right way to going to God. Now, Karen, how can people get a copy of this book, which is absolutely riveting?
Okay, they can get it off of Amazon, but I do have a website if they want to contact me or talk to me about their own experience.
Give me all the information. You can give out your phone number, you can give out the website, you can give out your Amazon.
Okay,
You're my friend. You can pretty much do whatever you want to do right now as far as having people contact you.
Okay, so my website is www.racingwithmyshadow, the name of my book, all one word, .com. And there you can read a little bit more about me. You can contact me if you want to, you know, talk to me on feedback or your own story. I'll always answer your emails. And you can get my book on Amazon. It's Racing with My Shadow.
Okay, now what's the cost of the book? How many pages is it? That kind of stuff.
It's $19.95, and it is about 430 pages. Let me tell you a quick story. It started out 27 years ago. I wrote this. It was 1,500 pages. So to get it down to 400, with the help of God, I turned down other publishers and I worked with my mom. But the really cool thing, and this is where you come into it, is I had brain fog, and you were talking about sweeteners being paint thinner. And I finally decided I'm going to quit the Diet Cokes and the coffee that I was addicted to for 30 years. So I stopped for a day, a week, a month. After 3 weeks, my brain fog cleared, and I was able to edit my book. And this is 2 years ago, which brought it to it coming out this year. So health, what you do, is so important, because if we don't have a body, our spirit can't work for the kingdom of God. So I just encourage people to take your products, to stay natural. But getting off those artificial sweeteners was the best thing I ever did, and I just thank you for that.
Well, Karen, thank you so much. I appreciate you so much. You know that. Anything you want to do, go ahead and take another minute and just say something to the listeners today, and just, you know, just bless them and pray for them if you want again, and just encourage them if you don't mind, please.
Well, my verse that I start the book out is John 8:32. You will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. And there's a lot of lies out there, but there's only one truth. And the truth of my childhood that God helped me find through prayer and through work, and as I was ready, as he uncovered all the memories, I was able to work through them. I would just encourage people to pray, to get a connection with God. You don't have to go to church. He's a prayer away. Even if you don't know the Bible, I didn't know the Bible either. He's your best friend. He will guide you through the process of getting over this. He will help you get the memories and see that child that was wounded and help you become a whole child so you can become a whole adult. And also, I would encourage people to just to seek a relationship with God. It's life changing. And just right now I'm reading the Bible and just growing with him. And I just hope that people are encouraged. There is hope. If you read my book, you'll know how miserable and horrible my life was. I was suicidal. It looked hopeless, but with God, all things are possible.
Karen, thank you so much. I appreciate you being on, my friend. And everybody, I encourage you to go to her website, check her stuff out. And if you can get her book, go ahead and get that. Thank you, Karen. I appreciate you, and we'll talk to you soon. God bless.
Thank you, and good luck with your family and your new grandbaby. I'm praying for you guys.
Thank you so much, Karen.
God bless.
Thank you. Now, Austin, you know, what's interesting about all of this and what we've seen over the years is this. You know, when people finally begin to realize that there's things in their lives that need to be changed and things in their lives they simply don't have to deal with anymore, and they finally get to a point where they've had Ganook, like Karen did, and she had that near-death experience, which basically took her to another level, people begin to realize that they don't have to live the life that they were living. I mean, here's the thing, and I'm going to bring this back to the health part about it again. I mean, if you're 20, 30, 40, 50 pounds overweight and you feel terrible, or if you're in a toxic relationship, or if you're taking 25 different prescription medications a day and you can't even think clearly, you can't even remember your name or remember what you ate for breakfast or even where you were for the last 3 days, that's not God's best for you. I mean, God wants you to have life and have it in abundance. I mean, the book of Jeremiah goes, I know the plans that I have for you, and they're plans to bless you and, you know, and basically, you know, give you a hope and a future. That's God's plans for you. And I'm sure that I'm so happy and so pleased and so blessed that Karen was able to find that hope and a future. What's your next story, Austin?
No, absolutely. I mean, there's definitely, and you know, I think a lot of people go through stuff similar to that. Maybe not exactly, but a lot of stuff that she talked about, you know, is very prevalent, especially in nowadays age. I mean, there's a lot of that stuff going on, and that's what we try to do is, you know, expose a lot of that now and, you know, try and help others. But, yeah, also other news as well. This is going on. The Bundy case, which seems to be never ending, is the federal government just has an absolute this obsession with these guys. However, though, the judge declared a mistrial Wednesday in the Bunkerville standoff case involving rancher Cliven Bundy and other defendants, finding that the federal government actually improperly withheld evidence. They said the mistrial in this case is most suitable, is the only remedy available. However, Bundy, his sons Ammon and Ryan, and co-defendant Ryan Payne will still be facing a new trial early next year on the charges from the 2014 standoff with federal agents out at the Bundy Ranch. This mistrial that they declared yesterday was from the Bunkerville standoff of the wildlife sanctuary that they basically took over. But they basically on this, they said that the video surveillance maps, FBI information were willfully withheld by the prosecution in violation of due process required by the Constitution, declaring a mistrial Wednesday for the Bunkerville standoff. So that's good. That aspect's over with now for them. The whole thing as far as with the Bundy Ranch standoff from 2014, I mean, we're coming up on almost 4 years ago now that they're going to another trial for next year for that. The issue that these guys ran into is that the federal government tried them as far as physically, you know, bowed up on them, tried to do a lat spread, put their hand on their pistol and said, you know, we're going to tell you what you can and can't do with your property. It doesn't matter what rights you've had for 100 years. We're going to do whatever we want to do because we're the BLM and you're going to like it. And the Bundys basically said, no. That doesn't work. That doesn't work for us. We got like 500 militia guys, and they're all armed. And if you guys want to escalate this, we promise you we will escalate it with deadly force. And that's the issue that happened. And the problem is the federal government does not like being called out, and they definitely don't like having to back down, which they all had to do, or it had been a nasty, nasty mess over there at the Bundy Ranch, especially for those federal agents. So hopefully they get a mistrial next year for that whole incident as well. Everything about that was completely handled poorly on the government's part. It should have never escalated. They should have never allowed it to reach that point. That's what the bigger man is supposed to do in the situation as the federal government, and step back and say, listen, we're not going to push this any further. We're going to kind of let this go. Of Nevada, areas out there with Utah, some of them are owned. 70-80% of the entire state is owned by the federal government, and that's the globalist agenda to completely dominate and control huge swaths of land out there so they can completely do whatever they want, whether it's solar panels, whether it's to sell it to the Chinese, whether it's to do smart grid stuff out there where they do tiny little compound smart cities with Bill Gates' giant fantasy is. So, but yeah, that's what's going on with them. That I saw an article today, so I figured I'd kind of bring it up and touch base on it.
Well, it just shows you, when you push a person or push a group or push a family or push the people of the United States to a certain point where they're not going to get pushed anymore, it's like taking a dog on a tack-trained, you know, Rottweiler and getting him in the corner with a stick and poking him. Sooner or later, that dog's coming after you. Sooner or later, that dog will either bite that stick, break it in half, or go for your throat. And see, that's the problem that the federal government doesn't understand. That's the problem of the Obama administration, the Gay Canyon. All they want to do is push their unbelievably communist agenda onto the United States. And that's why Trump had such a landslide victory over the witch of Benghazi. And now you guys notice, if you don't listen to the show very often, I don't like mentioning their names. I call the gay canyon, and I call the Witch of Benghazi the Witch of Benghazi. I'm sure you can fill in the blanks on who these people are. I mean, they're from the current prior administration, because I don't like speaking their names at all. To me, they're appalling. I don't like having anything to do with it. By the way, a third human organ now has been found at the Detroit wastewater plant. So now we have human organs. This is a Great Lakes Water Authority. Mystery continues to grow. For a third time in a week, an object that is now a human body organ has been found at the water resource facility. The organ was found just before 7 p.m. in the wastewater at the facility. And so apparently it was a human kidney. Now, this is some crazy stuff. Now, I don't know if people are cutting people up and dropping them down sewer and storm drains or whatever they're doing, or they're making it through somehow the processing plant. But in almost every single case, these wastewater plants take the water that they have as wastewater, and they reprocess this sewage water, and they turn it into Detroit drinking water. So now it's not bad enough that their water is contaminated with lead at the faucet. Now they're going to have human body part feces and who knows whatever else, organs ground up inside of the wastewater transmission facilities if they're not going through the proper filtration systems, which doesn't make any difference. I mean, think about this, guys. Do you really want to drink water that's got a dead human body floating in it, or parts of a human body floating in it, even if they run it through a filter? You kind of need to step away from that for a second and look at that. That's why we recommend the water treatment systems that we carry, the home distillation units. They're the best. You get the countertop unit. You can always have one. You also have one you put in your garage that'll pump water to your kitchen sink. So you make your own water. And we always walk around with like this gallon apple jug of water. And people think it's moonshine. And we also say it's not moonshine. It's distilled water. We put a few minerals back into it. And this is what we drink on an ongoing basis. And guys, if you learn how to take care of your body, I mean, think about this for a second. If you're not going to use a filter, if you're not going to use a distillation system, if you're not going to clean the water before you drink it, then when you put it in your body, your kidneys have to clean it, your liver's got to clean it, it's got to go through your circulatory system, and now you're going to be I tell people this way, Austin, either use a filter, use a distiller, or be a filter, because you're going to filter it, and you're going to have all of this now human body part remains through the water systems. And guys, I guarantee you, they may have found this for the first time and finally admitted to it, but this is not the first time they found those types of things, including who knows what else, including dead cats and dead dogs and everything else floating in the water. So guys, it's something that you need to be aware of, and that's why I tell people, don't drink reprocessed sewage water from any major municipality, guys. It's not worth the risk to your health. It's not worth the fluorine and the chlorine and the bromine and the salts and all the aluminum and the alum they put into the water to clarify it, which is aluminum. It's not worth all of that stuff. You put that stuff into your bodies. Always make sure you filter all of it, and I recommend a distillation system, Austin. What do you think?
I just want to know, where did this kidney come from, man? I mean, we're not talking like this is a body part that just normally falls out of people on accident while they're taking a bath. I mean, the kidney's a pretty important body part. Why do we have body parts showing up in there? I mean,
if you want to speculate, somebody probably got killed and they disassembled them and they dumped them into the sewage.
Yeah,
that's the only part you can do. I mean, you know, they used to run them through tree chippers, you know, when they kill people. Yeah. And they wasn't a tree chipper handling. I mean, so you got all of this stuff, because, you know, when you get organized crime, they don't really care, you know, what they do with the bodies in most cases. In fact, I was watching an edited version of that movie Goodfellas the other night. Got to watch it edited.
Oh, man.
It was commercial free and edited, no bad language on it, which I thought was kind of interesting. I watched it, and he said to the mob, you know, when people get shot or killed by the mob, they don't have a long discussion before they shoot somebody. They don't really care. They said the people never even knew it was coming who get shot. That's a pretty violent movie. I don't recommend letting kids watch that at all. But I had watched parts of it before, but I always turned it off because of language. But this one was edited completely for language, and it was commercial-free, which was kind of interesting. And so I thought, wow, okay. So I kind of choked through that one. I thought, wow, what a crazy lifestyle. But guys, when they got to get rid of bodies, they just get rid of bodies. And if that means they're grinding them up or cutting them up and throwing them in the storm sewage, somebody, like you said, Austin, somebody floated up a kidney. So, I mean, it's pretty sick stuff, man. Obviously, it was somebody who'd been murdered or met their end in an untimely way, but I have no idea what happened on that. But, guys, I want to thank you. I want to thank Karen again for being my guest today. I want to thank you for listening to us. I want to thank you for being our friends and supporting us and praying for us. We pray for you guys on an ongoing basis. Thank you for all that you do and continue to do for us. I love you guys, and I appreciate you. Thank you for getting your multiple vitamins from us. I'm so happy that Karen got off the diet sodas years ago after she heard us on the show and basically got her brain to clear up. And guys, use that as a word of encouragement, because quite frankly, if you're drinking diet drinks, it's one of those things that really, really needs to go. So again, thanks for your prayers. Thanks for supporting us. Continue to have a blessed Christmas season. I love you guys. Austin, I'll do the write-up, and I'll talk to you guys tomorrow.
Absolutely. And also in other news with what's going on with the finance markets, I found this pretty wild today. A Bitcoin exchange in South Korea went out of business this week after being hacked again, highlighting the perils of trying to have cash in this digital age, or trying to keep cash in this digital age. Seoul-based UBIT said it was filing for bankruptcy after cyber thieves stole nearly a fifth of its clients' holdings in an attack on Tuesday. This is the second time this year that UBIT, which allows customers to trade Bitcoin and other digital currencies, has been hit by hackers. In April, thieves made off with $35 million worth in digital currencies. This is the second time it's happened now, and so they're saying they're investigating it. Bitcoin's history is littered with cases of trading platforms coming under attack. Earlier this month, hackers stole more than $70 million worth of Bitcoins from digital currency platform at NiceHash. Last year, Hong Kong-based exchange BitFX was briefly shut down after hackers stole more than $60 million in Bitcoin. They said as the price of Bitcoins and similar virtual currencies continue to appreciate, we expect greater interest from attackers seeking to steal it. And this is the aspect that I told you was going to start happening with this, is this is going to continue to get worse and worse and worse, especially as Bitcoin gets artificially bloated up in this market. And so there's going to be a point in time when the feds are going to want to come in and they're going to say, listen, we have to control this. We have to regulate this. The Federal Reserve is going to bring in their own digital currency now, you know, call it the Fed Bitcoin or whatever you want to name it. And they're going to want to control and dominate every single aspect of it. And this is exactly what I called out for months and months and months now, that this is pretty much they've letting this go as a beta test to monitor it, control it, watch it, and figure out every aspect of it on how to essentially completely control and own this currency now, this cryptocurrency. And I'm still not convinced, as I've talked to multiple people already, that we don't have billions of dollars getting funneled in from the central banks into Bitcoin right now, propping it up higher and higher and higher, especially what we saw the last couple months with this stuff exploding in price, literally quadrupling within a month or two. So make sure you guys are being wise right now with your assets, especially going into next year. And again, if you guys need anything, healthmasters.com. We have all your supplements and anything you need. Give us a call or check out the website at healthmasters.com. Also, our excellent vitamin C capsule formula, incredibly good vitamin C formula, is on sale right now as product of the week for $28.78 per bottle. And be sure to check out the other products that are up for voting right now as product of the week, including our 275-serving survival buckets. A lot of people have been buying up those right now. We got a fresh batch in. So we appreciate everything. You guys have a blessed, safe, awesome night, and we'll talk to you again tomorrow, as always.